This is the Horrible Video Game Podcast from HorribleNight.com for Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Justin Lacey, catching up with Justin Gifford tonight. Justin, how's your gaming been going recently?
Pretty good. Fairly consistent, and I even played a game on Steam.
You are? Yeah, we talked you into something. Funny how...
You did.
Funny when we produce content, how it encourages the other, like, the other Horrible Night members to kind of, like, oh, I want to try that game, because we had some game curious stuff going on, and I think that may have caught your attention. But what else have you noticed about your gaming habits?
Well, you know, I'm playing a BioWare game, so I don't really have any gaming habits so much as I have Dragon's Age Inquisition.
That's fair.
That said, you know, you got me into Kaiju Agogo, and there's a giant dinosaur robot mecha thing, so it's pretty nice for a little 15-minute jump-ins.
Yeah, I was just talking to Cole, and he just finished Dragon Age and is waiting for The Witcher, and it was literally like, you know, you don't have to just play the massive games. It's good to have some palate cleansers available to you, so it's been kind of fun to just throw out different games and see which one sticks with everybody, so hopefully I can find something for you too, but may have already found something with Kaiju Agogo. But I am also, like, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I have started a bunch of small games because we've kind of ramped up with our Game Curious videos, and that's kind of, like, for me, it's find one indie game a week and give it a shot. And so I've started all these games, and I've got The Witcher on the whole horizon. And if I don't finish these games now, I'm not going to go back to them, but I also don't want to, like, delay starting The Witcher because I'm playing all these other games, so that is my current gaming dilemma, and we'll see how the Game Curious episodes adjust around that. But having too many games is always a good thing,
right?
Let's dive right in here, and so I put up a Game Curious of Kaiju Agogo a week or so ago, a couple weeks ago, and I literally bought it by the title alone. It was just like, just with that title, you're getting my $15 or whatever it was. But you saw something in it, so I'm kind of curious how Kaiju's been treating you.
I would say that really what got my attention is the isometric thing, and that goes way, way, way back to Desert Strike, the helicopter game.
Wow.
Which was, you know, back on the Genesis, which was kind of groundbreaking at the time. Yeah, and awesome. And like we talked about, the fact that this is essentially Rampage for adults makes a huge difference.
I mean, it's not 3D Rampage, but it is 3D Rampage. Like, because you're going off into the distance, and that was, I guess, that was what I expected you to throw out first, but the Desert Strike reference, that gets me excited, too. I totally get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I like the build parts to it. There are some things about it that are... I hate to say
the interface sucks
because I'm enjoying it. Yeah, the interface sucks.
It's okay. They can still learn and improve it, so it's fine. We just need to throw that out there for them.
But it's a lot of fun. I've even taken down a tier 2 city or two.
So you've actually defeated cities?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've got, I don't know, a half a dozen. But the problem that I've run into recently is I was almost done wiping a city out, and you know, I've upgraded my Kaiju and I've got 950 health and it's badass, and then I think I'm gonna totally wipe the city out and take it over, and some fucking laser tank shows up and shoots me from across the map and kills me, and I was like, I'm sorry, what just happened?
Awesome. I like when that game throws out little surprises, because I like with those, I don't know, with indie games to some extent, you don't know how far they can go, and like, so you, I almost box them in when I start playing them. It's like, I feel like I have an idea of their limits, and then when they surprise you like that, that always kind of takes it to another level. I enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and their little updates, the news updates that show up, crack me up. So it's been a lot of fun.
What's your favorite power so far on your Kaiju?
The Godzilla flame thing that'll light like an entire block on fire. It's pretty sweet. You know, they're all a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the fact that I can upgrade. I finally got to the tier 3 upgrades. So I can use the fireball gets upgraded. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it yet, but I'm looking forward to that because I love that, you know, sort of mortar fireball, but it's really weak.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I'd like the kind of the building aspect of it, take care of the base and like enhancing the kaiju. I thought I just wanted Rampage. I thought I just wanted just throw me in level. Let me destroy some more shit. Like, but I did find myself in the little that I've played, excited every time I unlocked a new ability just to see what it could do, and then laughing at the destruction that I have caused. And because gave me a couple good maniacal laughs. And I guess that's a good thing is I also didn't initially like the like kind of mad scientist vibe that it has. Like, I kind of like the, I don't know, the alien kaiju type of history rather than like man made. It makes sense for, you know, for fleshing out the rest of the game. Because honestly, if it was just 3D Rampage, it would be kind of boring.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun in terms of obviously trashing stuff. The challenges pop up kind of unexpectedly. I mean, you think you're just going to a place and smashing it, and then surprise, surprise, some place has a battleship right when you show up, and I'm like, I'm dead. I'm going to die. on the other hand,
it's nothing sadder than a kaiju turning tail and running away.
On the other hand, you know, I'm destroying Calgary and just smashing the shit out of this town. It's like 61% damage and they're still not surrendering. I'm like, I'm running out of buildings to destroy here, guys. So it's fun. I have no idea what the end game, but like what's going to happen in terms of you can build like walls and gun towers and upgrade them
on your base.
I'm not real sure what happens there. So that'll be interesting to see as I progress through the game.
Yeah, I did get a sense of, I saw some of that stuff. So I was like, I'm not interested in that, but, you know, we'll see where the game, like, am I going to get attacked? I keep almost expecting, like, an enemy kaiju to show up at some point. And then we get some King of the Monsters action going on, but.
Do you have any idea? Oh, man, King of the Monsters is a great game. Do you have any idea what the story is with the chapter 2 and 3 where you get new kaiju? Because I didn't really look into it too much.
I mean, it looked like they're releasing them as DLC every couple weeks. And so, from my understanding, you'd have to pay for them. Probably a couple bucks a pop. But I don't think... Let me double check. I don't think they've released one yet. I was kind of curious about that, too. Like, especially because they were calling them chapters and not...
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you can get to the... Can you beat the game now? Like, I would hope... Like, this wasn't an early release or a early access type of game, so...
Right. No, I mean, and it was $13.
Yeah.
Not like I bought a $5 game.
Right. So. That's a good point. Let me see if I can't tell what they're doing here. Because I thought that would be out by now, but it doesn't look like it.
Don't take it the wrong way, like...
No, we're just curious where it's going.
I'm having a lot of fun with it, but on the other hand, like, what's for a $13 game.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's kind of to be determined, but that was very unclear when I bought the game, but I like the initial kaiju and definitely want some other options to play with. So we'll see what they add with when they add new monsters to the game. So did it end up, scratching any of that Desert Strike itch? Like, as far as,
I mean, I still kind of want to go back and play Desert Strike or for somebody to like redo Desert Strike so I can use the analog instead of the old Genesis Digital. But I like that isomorphic aspect, and the frustrations with the isomorphic are exactly the same. Like, you can't see some things because of the camera angle and somebody's smoking you and you can't see them. So, you know, I've taken pretty... systematically demolishing like chunks so nobody can sneak up on me.
And nothing worse than like a tank hiding behind a building that one, you can't see, two, can hit you, and three, you can't target until it moves.
Right. So, yeah.
So how's it running on your laptop? I know you were kind of curious. You weren't going to run it on your main machine.
I've had some strange quirks. I have to turn big picture mode on, launch the game, shut big picture mode down, and then click on the, you know, little icon in the menu bar, and it shows it up on my second monitor. Okay. So
yeah, you're having trouble with the second display. Got it.
I have no idea what the issue was, but I fixed it. So
somebody,
it's fine unless it's like DEFCON 4 and there's like 45 Jeeps all shooting at me. Plus all like when there's a whole bunch of stuff going on the screen, it stutters a little because I've got, you know, email open and things like that.
Yeah. Trying to do work here while I play this game.
A little bit. So it's running fine. No big deal.
Yeah, I was gonna, as someone that tries to stream or record various indie games, like they all have their kind of launcher quirks. It's just kind of one of those things of like each one's kind of treat the window a little bit differently, especially I found right after launch, and they tend to fix that stuff. But it's there's always some weird behaviors with, especially when you're doing dual monitor setups with those types of games. But I don't know, it kind of comes with the territory, and I haven't had any problems running it out of my machine, and it sounds like it scaled pretty well for your machine, so that's a good thing. Yeah.
Well, and Coop told me, is like sometimes it just straight up doesn't work.
Yeah, or so. I've also found like with a lot of Steam games, like you'll run it that first time, you know, and it'll do the little setup, it'll install whatever it needs to install, and then it'll launch, and it'll be kind of messed up, and if you quit, and then quit Steam, and then restart Steam, and launch it a second time, it tends to run a lot better. Like, I almost do that by default now with, like, any game, for whatever reason. So, PC gaming, man, it's easy.
Yeah, totally. Just turn it on and go.
I know you're a huge fan.
I honestly, I was sitting down here the other day and thinking, maybe I should just get a Steam box, like, next Christmas. You know, just have another thing sitting down here that's, you know, spend $500, get like a mid-grade, or
yeah, I hope
$600, get a mid-grade one and hook it up too.
I hope they get that shit together. I could make use of that. So, do you have anything else to say about Kaiju Agogo before we move on?
I do not.
All right.
I'm enjoying it. I wish my dinosaur robot mecha thing wasn't purple. But other than that, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing some more.
Cool. All right. It's time to unleash your inner Dragon Age. Because I don't think we've really formally talked about this. We may have last year.
We haven't even really informally talked about this. You're like, no.
Because let's see. We went through, I played about 30 hours of it. I played that in last fall. And then after I was done, that's kind of when you and Cole both swooped in and got obsessed with the game.
Cole got obsessed before I did. I didn't actually buy it until March.
Okay. So what was your relationship with the other Dragon Age games first?
I played Dragon Age Origins when it was free or $5 or something on you know, Xbox Live. Picked it up. I was enjoying it. It was kind of clunky. Because I think it even preceded Mass Effect 1, or roughly contemporaneous, a little bit before. It was a little clunky, but I was enjoying it. I don't know how much time I put into it. Not a huge amount, 20 hours, something like that. And I think I even briefly entertained playing Dragon Age 2, and everybody and their mother said, Dragon Age 2 doesn't exist. Please don't play that. So I skipped that, and then I was a little hesitant to actually buy Dragon Age Inquisition because I was remembering Dragon Age 1, and you very sagely said, and Matt, keep in mind, BioWare has now had the chance to do the entire Mass Effect series and learn from it. And I went, okay, I'm going to buy that today.
and also learn the little lessons from Mass Effect 3. Like, and like, what are they doing going forward? Like, so I just looked it up real quick. Mass Effect 1 was actually 2007, and then Dragon Age was 2009, but it was out before Mass Effect 2. So,
considered, I think Mass Effect 2 may be my favorite one in the series.
I'm with you. But they hadn't learned the lessons of Mass Effect 2 yet with Dragon Age Origins, and at the time we just assumed, oh, here's their other trilogy, and they're gonna be identical in, you know, story structure and choice, like choice engine, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And Dragon Age had just a much different trajectory than the Mass Effect did, because I don't know what they were thinking with two. I get trying something different, but damn. And so it was,
because the issue was that it was kind of boring because it was all in Kirkwall, right?
Right, right. And it was, everything was super repetitive, and it just, you know what? I mean, I think what we all, and we can say this about Inquisition as well. I like the Dragon Age universe. I think the political struggles in it are interesting and different as far as like what you expect from just a straight up fantasy game. And they spent so much time like on that broader world. It was just, it's kind of silly to see them just confine it to the one city there. But what I'm really getting to is like, no one really knew what to expect from Inquisition other than, all right, you're trying another one of these and you obviously want to see this go forward. And we're all kind of curious what BioWare looks like after Mass Effect 3. So this could be a shit show or it could be awesome. And it turns out it's pretty fucking awesome.
It is pretty fucking awesome. I guess I should probably point it, or, you know, explain. I am playing as a Dalish elf rogue. I started out using bows and arrows, but that was boring. So I'm now using double daggers, and I really enjoy.
You're getting into shit,
know,
then.
Sneaking out behind people and, you know, yeah, slicing their kidneys.
Yeah, both Cole and I we like that bow. We like to stay out of trouble there and send in some of our bigger warriors into the
fray. Did you roll with like the with Cassandra and Blackwall and the Iron Bowl, or because I've had trouble with having two ranged people, like, yeah, one of them always ends up getting screwed.
So I actually had Blackwall. I actually started doing Blackwall, the kind of ghost rogue, the undead guy or whatever he is.
Yeah, Cole.
And then I had a mage. So we had two. So yeah, it was Blackwall was my tank, and then but sometimes I would sub in Iron Bull, but I would rarely have two of the warriors in at once. But I started using the rogue after he showed up, and
gotcha.
I was kind of doing more crowd control stuff with my arrows and kind of using the mage in the same regard, just to keep those other guys alive, but and to do damage where I could. But is rogue a normal class for you?
I think I played with a rogue in the first Dragon Age. And to be honest, I think rogue is sort of, if you translate that to the Mass Effect games and even to the Jedi Knight games, I tend to play with a sniper or somebody who can, even maybe it's not a sniper, but somebody who can turn invisible, either do that or somebody who can get in real close and deal a whole crap load of damage, both of which are rogue attributes.
Okay, cool.
I didn't realize that until just now while we're having this conversation.
That's what we're here for.
But yeah. Yeah, I'm rolling with normally Iron Bull and Cassandra. So a tank, and then Iron Bull is less tank because I've got him with a two-handed weapon. And then Dorian, gotcha, the other, a wizard. But if I go kill a dragon, I bring Sarah, the elf, who has bow and arrow with a master dragon.
That's the funny thing is, playing with her, like, I don't need her in my group, but I like her character. I want her in my group, but I kind of fulfill her role, so that was kind of unfortunate. But
I essentially have Rex and Garrus in in my party, so I'm happy.
You need to write your Dragon Age for Mass Effect Dummies book. relate everything directly to Mass Effect. So you've been playing quite a bit. There's a lot to talk about this game, but let's just kind of, what's like the biggest surprises to you in this game? What is it doing that you didn't expect that you enjoy?
I will tell you something that blew my mind. I think last night I'm playing and I get to the point where you bring up the fact that Iron Bull's second in command is a trans woman. And you're like, so you're okay with that? And he's like, she's good in a fight, or he's good in a fight with a sword. I don't really care that he has more trouble peeing standing up. Jeez. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, the most masculine character in the game is like, I'm cool with that. Move on.
Do you know who voices Freddy? sorry. Do you know who voices Iron Bull?
Is that Freddy Prince Jr.?
Yes.
That's even better. He was Vega in the first one, in Mass Effect 3. But I loved that. I thought it was...
It kind of
blew my mind a little. I was like, did that just happen?
Like, using that character to kind of make those statements is just... That's a genius move.
Since this is audio only, you can't see me, but I was nodding my head in complete agreement. The dragon battles are, I think,
so I'm haven't suffering. Done a, I haven't done a dragon battle yet, just so you know where I'm coming from, but I've watched one.
I think I probably overlevel myself. Like, it's a game play style that I do. I didn't even know it was called overleveling until Jordan was talking about it. But except for one dragon, I haven't been really blown away by them, except for the first time I ran into one way under leveled and just died. The first one in the Hinterlands, there's one of them that just constantly turns guard on. Mm-hmm. And it took me like, I don't know, an hour and 25 minutes. The entire party is dead except for Cassandra. So I'm just like, my guard's picking all the way up. Oh God, it took forever.
But you won.
I killed that bitch.
but have you, like, the dragon battles, like, the structure of them are different than any other kind of creature fight, I would guess. I mean, they're probably more comparable to the bosses, but just, like, you can't, I don't know, they're kind of an event in themselves, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm enjoying them. Like, they're fun. As a rogue, I just get between the legs and, you know, go for the groin, pretty much.
Slice that taint.
Yeah. But I really like the fact the loot drop tends to be pretty generous.
Cool.
Unfortunately, I just found the new highest level of armor for my character after I burned through all of my dragon bone. And I'm like, son of a...
so what's the thing that stands out that you want BioWare to kind of work on for this game, or just there any of the other games coming up?
One thing I would say is, got whoever is doing your character design, you've got to hire a woman, because the female characters all stand really weird. Like, their pelvis is pushed forward, so their knees are cut. They all stand like Tally, except Tally was an alien, so it never bothered me. Like, so they sort of stand like pelvis forward, knees kind of bent, leaning back a little bit. It's this really weird articulation. So if you get back into it, look, and you will see particularly Cassandra stands really freaking weird.
I was going to say, like, now you're not going to be able to unsee it. So,
oh, no, no. Other than that, you know, there were some of those collection quests where it's like they don't have enough of the ingredient. So you have to kind of game the system in terms of you go kill some guys, you get one of them, you fast travel and then go right back where you were because they respawn.
Sure.
And I'm like, come on. Like, we've got 30 years of respawning experience under our belt. You should be able to control that.
Sure.
That if you kill all of the Red Templars in this region, you will get all of the Orlesian tomes and all of the whatever. I thought that was a slightly sloppy piece of game design.
Gotcha.
Other than that, you know, the interface is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
The fast travel is fairly quick for as big as the game is. It's a darn pretty game. Mm-hmm. Combat's pretty good. There's a lot of buttons. I just mean, like, in terms of, you know, your abilities, seems like there's a lot.
But on the other hand, for a game that obviously has its roots in PC fantasy RPGs, being able to map that to the controller as well as they have, I mean, that's a pretty big improvement from the first Dragon Age for sure. And, you know, got to that point where, you know, I definitely preferred playing Mass Effect with a controller. And when that game came out, like, based on how I played Knights of the Old Republic, like, I played that on PC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I played that on PC too, both 1 and 2.
I wouldn't have thought that I would have been able to get away from the keyboard and mouse at that point. So they've come a ways with that stuff.
The one thing I've run into is the crafting. There should be, and this is kind of nitpicking crap, but when you're crafting something, you should be able to jump directly to inventory to compare, and you can't. And that just may be an issue with the fact that I'm playing on a console rather than PC. Yep. But that drives me a little crazy, especially because there's some sort of bug that if you jump from inventory to crafting to character record while you're in the Undercroft, the basement of the castle that you get, mm-hmm. it will restart the game. And it's happened to me like 6 times.
Did you hear what happened to Cole at the end of his game, like literally after he beat it and he's walking to the final area to like do the final cutscene?
No.
That was the first time the game crashed on him. It was like
he had to redo the battle?
No, he didn't have to redo the battle, but it ended up like quick saving right where he was, so it wasn't a big deal. But the only time the game crashed was it's after the battle and he's going to like have the final conversations or whatever to trigger the final scenes, and it crashed on him. So that I'm sure his heart dropped at that point. But
yeah, I only had a couple crashes. The most fun that I did run into, though, was, and I have a couple of these recorded, I need to send them to you, is one where I was talking to somebody and there were like two people in the background sparring, and neither one of them had heads. There was another one just yesterday where it clearly brought the screen up before it should have, like it was still loading, mm-hmm. and you're seeing all of the textures like load in.
It reminded you of Gears of War. It's like always associated with like old school Unreal games.
It actually made me more think of like something from, you know, 1999.
Gotcha.
Old PC gaming, but yeah, Gears of War is not a bad example.
So the next Dragon Age and the next Mass Effect are going to be perfect if they can make the female stand not awkwardly, and if they kind of fix their grinding for certain items. That was basically what I took from your statements.
That's fair. I would like to see a little bit more back and forth between the two, where Mass Effect's inventory gets a little bit more Dragon Age-y.
Yeah.
And Dragon Age's gets a little bit more Mass Effect-y. I think, in my mind, and there's a sweet spot of inventory management and crafting that nobody has gotten right yet.
And in case it hadn't come across, this is how nitpicky you're being, because we're saying this game's pretty awesome because you and Cole won't shut up about it. And
yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sitting here complaining about like the tiniest shit. The game is awesome. I love it. I've dumped like, I can't tell how many hours because it doesn't stop counting in your save, how long you've been playing in the save games, unless you actually exit out to main menu.
You were guessing like 70-ish?
60 to 70 hours, which is right up there with the other BioWare games and Elder Scrolls 4. Yeah. I mean,
and this is just your first playthrough, so.
Oh, God.
You, knowing you.
Yeah, I'll probably go back to it after I play something else.
All right, I want to get through this real quick, but what would you like to say to The Witcher 3?
I'll get there eventually.
Okay.
I mean, I'm interested in it. I really want to play it, but I still have to beat Witcher 1 or Witcher 2.
Okay.
I didn't play Witcher 1. Yeah, because I have Witcher 2, but I took a pause on that to play Mass Effect.
Gotcha.
Or
yeah, we'll have to. I'm
to play Dragon Age.
I'm playing Witcher 2 right now, so we'll have to. You and I can regroup on that when everybody is talking Witcher 3. So, but I'm gonna move forward here and let's see if we can't find you some other smaller games to play in between your dragon hunting. So the first one that came to mind, first of all, did you see Aaron's game Curious on Westerado Double Barreled?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay. All right. I suggest not watching it. Well, I suggest looking at a screenshot first, only because I think you'll really enjoy it if you look at a screenshot and tell me if the pixel graphics annoy you. So that'll be a kicker for you because you've got, well, one, we kind of, what, did you just did I misunderstand, or did you discover during your colorblindness research that you're a little bit colorblind?
I knew I was a little bit colorblind, or I'm borderline colorblind. So, which is not particularly helpful, but it's a saturation issue.
Yeah.
With me, it depends on what colors there are. Turning on the colorblind filter helps me.
And then we also determine that, like, pixel graphics with hard, like, harder edges or even borders to some of the, like, lines around characters kind of help you out a little bit. I don't know. Westerado's, so it's a Western game, obviously, so there's lots of desert, lots of cowboys, lots of brown.
I do love Westerns.
Yes. So, aside from the artwork, Western starts off with somebody killed your family. You have one clue to go off of from your dying brother. He gives you a clue as the killer. I don't know who it was. The killer was wearing a blue vest. And then you go into town, and it is full of NPCs that have quests for you to do. And they will reward you with another, like, hint as to what that your brother's killer might look like. And at any point, you can pull a gun on any NPC and accuse them of killing your brother. And you either find him or you kill them or something else happens. But my favorite little aspect of this game is the fact that you can draw on anyone you're talking to at any time. And
I'm looking at some images. Yeah. I think I could probably do this. There's part of me that the, like, 8-year-old part of me is screaming, why are the graphics not better? Because this looks like I could have played this on Commodore 64. Uh-huh. I mean, looks like I could have played it. But no, this would not bother me, I don't think. I actually sort of think that this image here of you playing poker is sort of artful.
Yeah.
Where nobody has faces. So, no, the pixel graphics would not drive me crazy.
Okay. All right. That's good, because then I think you should try it for the story, and, like, beyond that, you're doing quests kind of like, I heard it actually compared to, like, A Link to the Past, as far as the overworld style and exploring and going to do quests for people and then reporting back and then trying to also solve a whodunit type of mystery at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That is randomly generated every time you start the game over. So
it's who did it?
Yes. So it just picks a random NPC. And gives you details about them. So that was kind of the hook there. I thought that, and it's supposed to be only like 2 to 3 hours long, so something you can also knock out. And if I figured you'd dig the Western style in that story. And
kill Dad, Grandma?
So that would be my big one. The other one, this is on PC.
You have to tell me about this game because it looks pretty.
Yes.
But I don't know anything about it other than several of the guys who have played Ori and the Blind Forest won't shut up.
It's
like they're like, this is a great game.
Yep. So it's Xbox One and PC. Beautiful art style, but it's underneath it all, it's a Metroidvania. And so it's got all exploration to it, and some pretty ingenious just kind of like skills that you learn, like one of the things that stood out to me was you drop your own save points. So, like, you basically charge this thing up, and if you have it saved in, like, a relatively short amount of time, you can drop a save point anywhere. But if you don't remember to drop that save point, you could kind of screw yourself, too. So, but good platforming, and it's just a really kind of fantastical, magical atmosphere kind of really stood out. Like, really, I don't know, atmospherically, it kind of pulled me in, like, limbo. For that was what I first felt. It doesn't feel quite as lonely after it gets going, but it pulls on the heartstrings to start the game, and then as you see the world open up, you're like, oh, there's a lot more to this. I thought this might just be, you know, a run from left to right type of platformer, but there's lots of things to kind of go around and do, and you know, so this came out right around Axiom Verge, but I would think this one would be more up your alley based on our Axiom Verge conversations. So,
yeah, no, that sounds like I should probably play it. A quick, totally off topic question. This made me think about who did was it Supergiant Games? Is that what it was called?
That's Bastion. Yeah,
Bastion. Are they doing anything?
They haven't announced their next project since Transistor, but I'm sure they're working on something. So I would not be surprised to see that announced at E3, the way that those things kind of stagger out. So
gotcha.
And then the last one, because I believe this is free to play on Xbox One now too, and we've played it quite a bit, but have you tried to play Warframe?
I have not.
What do you know about
it? I don't have any objection to it.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's a first person.
We decided.
First person shooter.
We decided with
Gears of War style.
Yeah, it's third person. You're a space ninja with lots of swords and guns. Going
then
on
you can choose between like several different
several different warframes
tribes or whatever.
Yeah, different warframes, different abilities, and we decided that it's basically a better version of Destiny. So if
that wouldn't take much. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
But they added like kind of a hub for your character, like on a ship that you do all your upgrades and choose missions and that sort of thing. And it's really great co-op. I would not recommend it as a solo game, but as a free to play co-op game, we still keep going back to it. And I think you'd enjoy the action side of it. And it's got a kind of unique sci-fi look to it too. So
I will tell you the one thing that I want to play that I have not is FTL. I've never played FTL and I own it and I want to play it.
You should get that on. It's actually really good on the tablet too. So if you have that option, I don't remember if it's on Android or not. But
I need to buy a new tablet, so we'll just play it on the laptop.
And speaking of FTL, which highly recommend, yeah, definitely play that because I don't even like those type of games, and I love that game. There's also another one called Convoy. I haven't played it yet, but it's FTL, but it's Mad Max.
Okay.
I don't know if that.
I have to find this
I believe it's called
video Convoy on YouTube.
Yeah. So yeah, it looks like you got a few. I would say Westerado sounded like it.
Yeah.
Westerado
sounded
like it.
Convoy.
Yes. And then you
C.W. McCall Convoy YouTube. Here we go. This link's gonna have to be involved.
All right. So it sounds like Westerado kind of hit for you and. I think you're excited about FTL and Convoy. And Ori and the Blind Forest is a bit of a deeper dive, but like I said, could be a palate cleanser for you too. So
With the advertising of Advevania or the Castlevania guy who Symphony Night guy who got his project funded to make a Metroidvania
let's jump to that.
We can't not talk about that.
Quick game industry shout-outs. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm actually required by Horrible Night Law to bring up anything Castlevania-related when it's big news. But Koji Igarashi, the creator of Castlevania Symphony of the Night and most of the Castlevania games since then that aren't 3D, broke off from Konami a while back, and he just started his Kickstarter successful Kickstarter at this point for his new game Bloodstained, which is very much a spiritual successor to his Castlevania games. And beyond like, okay, that's all the only sales pitch I need for it, but that artwork was fucking gorgeous. Like seeing him, he hasn't got to do a console version of Castlevania unless you count that multiplayer Harmony of Dissonance thing or Harmony of Despair. I forget which one it was, but he hasn't done a console version since Symphony of the Night. So to see him actually playing with, you know, a little bit more power here, and the art style looks like it really popped, and I just try and decide how much money to give to this Kickstarter. So there's my disclaimer.
I think the answer, isn't the answer $3,000?
Yeah, because then I get my Corgi in the game.
That tier. You don't need electricity.
No. I also decided, so this is really similar to Inafune, the guy, the Mega Man guy, when he broke off and made his Kickstarter for the spiritual successor to Mega Man, that I've decided I have to give more money to the Castlevania Kickstarter than I did to the Mega Man one, just on principle.
I agree with that. I agree entirely.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I had played Castlevania as a kid, the first one, And I had read about, was it Castlevania 2 with Alucard?
That's 3. 3?
3? Yeah, and thought that was really cool, but I wasn't a Nintendo kid. So I was away from Castlevania for, I don't know, 20 years? And then I played Symphony of the Night, and my head exploded because it was so awesome. So, yeah.
I didn't realize you were into that game as well, so that's good to know we have that.
Oh, dude, I got 100% completion on that game. Don't talk to me.
Well, there's like 200% to do, so you only beat half the game.
I did it upside down, too. I did it both ways.
I'm just giving you a hard time. I forget what... It's a weird percentage. I forget what the... It's like 200 and something or 180 something or what the actual full completion percentage is in that game. I have
the achievement to prove it. Okay. I got full completion.
All right. Well, let's go on to your story. What do you got here?
Okay, so it turns out that at least elite gamers, action gamers, have more connections in their brain than the normal person. They are more or less smarter.
Fact.
Yeah, fact. Like, this involves MRIs and, you know, real doctors and stuff like that. So that's fun. It just sort of cracked me up because I'm like, well, I could have told you that, but you're looking at expert action video gamers had superior cognitive abilities compared to amateurs. And I'm just going to go ahead and assume that amateurs have superior cognitive abilities to, I don't know, people that read the paper. So, or watch network news. So I don't know. It was just one of these things that popped up, and whoever wrote it actually linked to the scholarly article that they were referring to, which meant I, you know, got to really, really hard nerd out.
We got to figure out a way. Yeah, we got to figure out a way where you can just jot down like a paragraph or two about these types of things, just so you can get that out in the world. But that's I'd be kind of curious if it has anything to do with when you play these games, like as far as like at what point in your childhood development do you start playing games like this, like during your brain, while your brain's developing, versus is that something you can pick up at 30 and it'll like kind of improve your brain function, or is it something that like you, as your brain was, you know, as your brain was growing, as you were growing up, kind of doing that at that point of that developmental period, does that have a bigger impact?
Well, I mean, I'd have to think that to some degree it's the same as, were you active as a kid?
Yeah.
If you're active as a kid, it's good for you. But even if you're a fat slob as an adult, going out and getting some serious exercise is still good for you.
There you go. Video games are exercise for the brain. Good exercise for the brain. I think we got time for one more link, so we'll go with your last link here. So I'm curious on your take.
Which was your link initially.
Yeah, but you took it and ran, so...
So there is an augmented reality game called Night Terrors, which is on Indiegogo right now. They're about 50% of the way through their time limit and 50% of the way to their goal, which seemed pretty modest, and it was only 75 grand. But it is, they took horror movie, they basically made a horror movie augmented reality game that uses your cell phone and you play in your house. That's a horrible explanation.
So you're walking around your house in your dark house with your phone, and it's
GPS to find where you are in the house. So it uses the flash as a flashlight. It turns your house into a horror set, and that sounds awesome.
So it uses like everything in the phone, like you said, the light, the camera, the microphone, the speakers, everything to kind of basically use all that data to make a map of your house. It builds a map of your house, and then it starts putting, like, when you're looking through the screen, the kind of night vision looking screen on your phone, and you're seeing like down your hallway, it's gonna like, through augmented reality, put ghosts and shit in your hallway and have them chase you around the house. And because it knows how the layout of your house, the behavior of these creatures is going to change, like whether or not they're behind walls and they're going to continue to follow you through the house. And I kept trying to think, what's the win state here? Like how do you? But
you
also
the ground and stay alive, according to the Indiegogo. I mean, like the hair on the back of my neck just stood up as you're describing this. I'm thinking about playing it.
Yeah, it's it really got my attention, and like it got a lot of like, oh shit, I'm not even gonna watch that video, like type of attention from, you know, from the developers I work with that love augmented reality. Like it's like, ah, that sounds awesome. I don't want to know how they're doing it, but because I'm too scared of it. And if they pull it off, it could be terrifying. And I was glad I kind of stumbled across that when Killscreen, they wrote about it. And they always kind of find these interesting things. So they did say, the guy reached out to me on Twitter and said the campaign's kind of stagnated here the last couple days. So they're in the middle of their run, and hopefully they get a spike here. But the idea looks really interesting if they can pull it off.
Well, I am going to start my own campaign for people to support their campaign, because that looks awesome. And they also use practical special effects instead of digital, which I'm all about, because they look way better than digital. Sorry if you do digital special effects, but Ray Harryhausen is God.
There's also unrelated. I just saw an advertisement for an H.R. Giger documentary that's coming out soon. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, so a couple Kickstarter stories, Indiegogo. That stuff's kind of, I don't know. What's your take on Kickstarter, Indiegogo right now? I thought it kind of burned itself out, but like seeing, coming across a couple cool projects, plus like the traditional, hey, the guy that made the game you loved wants to make another one of those. That like two of those came out, because the Yooka-Laylee, the Banjo-Kazooie guys from Rare also did this and it quickly got funded. And I kind of thought, you know, we're on the other side now where Double Fine's adventure game has come out and was kind of started this whole Kickstarter madness for gaming. And I thought we might have become more skeptical and cooled off that we wouldn't see these runaway successes like this. But I don't know. I think I think people are a little bit more picky, but there's still room for people to throw a bunch of money at projects they're excited about.
Yeah, I think so too. And particularly when you have Ubisoft and EA and whoever absolutely not listening to you whatsoever. It's nice to be able to say, this is actually the kind of game I want to play. I'm tired of climbing towers and opening up new areas on the map. Like, that was fun the first six games I played it in.
did you watch the Castlevania video? Like, he's pretty funny. He's pretty snarky with his, the publisher said we shouldn't do this game. So
I did. I watched it. I loved it. And boy, that is some nice art.
And that was awesome. Yeah, super, lots to be excited about. There's always, looks like, always new projects out there. And, you know, if hopefully check out Night Terrors. If you like it, help them out. Bloodstained is on its way, but there's still some swag to get if you really want to help that game along, too, because I needed me a Bloodstained art book. That's probably what I'm looking at right now. And the soundtrack.
Well, you also need a... somebody taking video of me playing
Night Terrors. Yes.
That needs to happen.
All right, that's going to do it for Horrible Video Game Podcast. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. We'll be back with another podcast on HorribleNight.com next week, and we'll talk to you then. See ya.